Hi, I'm Mal. I'm a food addict, compulsive eater. And I say compulsive eater also because I've been expert at overeating and undereating, and both are compulsive behaviors. So, you know, the older you get, the longer your story gets. So I'll do as best I can in 30 minutes. So my mom had this disease. My mother was a first generation American from Russian immigrants. She's the only one in the family that spoke English, and she lived on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, which is where a lot of the immigrants came in to, just in case you didn't know, I was from the East Coast. And her goal in life was to be a modern American, beautiful woman. And her second goal was to be a mother of a modern American, beautiful girl. She had great expectations for me. She picked out my name. The doctor said they have the pink instruments out for the girl, baby, and if it's a boy, it's going back. And my father brought her out of anesthesia because she had a C-section, chanting my name in her ear. Nice story. I was the apple of her eye when I was a baby and a toddler, and probably up until the age of 10 or so or 11. She always looked at me with great love and was just she was a great mom. And I'm very grateful that she was a great mom in my formative years, because that gave me whatever I seemed to have needed to get through how she treated me in my later life. I now have great compassion for my mother. I have no anger towards her. In those days, and unfortunately a lot in these days, she never went for help anywhere, and she and her friends never talked about these kinds of things. My mother started giving me enemas around 6, I guess, always on the, with the statement that, you know, I have to go regularly. I liked sugar from the beginning. I remember on Sundays, I was raised Jewish, and on Sundays we had Jewish Christmas. On the Sunday near Christmas, we had Jewish Christmas, which is Chinese food at a movie. And I remember the fights in the Chinese restaurant because she would put sugar into the pot of tea, and I wanted sugar right into my cup so that it could be there after I finished the tea so I could have that sugar straight. If I put sugar on anything, I was good. And I had put it on many things that normal people would never even think of doing. And that's the only food item I will mention, because I'm sure there's other people as addicted to sugar as I am. So I grew up a very happy child. I have some pictures. This is on the front is my parents' wedding day, before I was even a notion in anybody's loins. So, I've been in recovery since 1982. I've had 3 relapses, and I haven't had any relapses in the last 15 years at least. I'm vegan, ethical vegan. I was vegetarian since the 70s and became vegan. Sorry, I can talk loud. And became vegan 15 years ago. And when I was around 10 and a half, I started menstruating and filling out. And people thought I was like 16 when I was 10 and a half, 11. But my mother saw me as getting fat. And I can still remember the look on her face of disgust when she looked at me one day. And unfortunately, you know, I'm forgetting a lot of things. I'm 72, so I'm forgetting a lot of things. I wish I could forget some of those types of memories. Can't forget some of them. It's like she looked at me like that yesterday. And she went on a mission for the rest of the time until I moved to California in my mid-20s to make sure that I would be thin and beautiful. and she wanted me to go to college. I loved helping people. And she said I came out of the womb helping the doctors deliver me. She said, just grabbed onto their hands and they pulled myself out. And she put into me, I did want to be a nurse, until I became a nurse, and then I couldn't stand working with the nurses, and I couldn't stand any of the doctors. I couldn't stand the way anybody treated each other in that world. But she really wanted me to be a nurse so I could marry a doctor. She wasn't really interested in me having a profession. It was really to meet a doctor. Well, I couldn't stand the doctors. I wasn't interested in meeting a doctor. And she never told me how to get a guy. She just figured I'll be there. I'll be so gorgeous. They'll want to, you know, meet me. I went back to school, met my ex-husband, and but let me back up a little. Before I got into nursing, she had me on diet pills. She took me to a doctor who put me at 13, I think I was, maybe 12 and a half, 13, on amphetamines, thyroid medication to speed up my thyroid, which they did without even taking a test, water pills, sleeping pills, and that was the beginning of my journey addicted to those types of drugs. So while my brain was developing and my body was developing, I had the only Jewish mother in New York who delighted in her daughter not eating.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. She would take food away from me. She would lie about, she'd hide food so I wouldn't get it. She controlled how much I would eat. She would give me filthy looks if we were in restaurants and I was enjoying my food. It made her sick to see me enjoy my food. And she was a lousy cook, so when we went out to eat, it was a treat. So very early on, she started emotionally abusing me. So she'd say things like when company was coming over and she had lots of parties and friends with my dad, they had cocktail parties and stuff. She'd tell me, I don't want them to see what you look like. You have to stay in your room tonight. If I was trying to get dressed to go out to be with some friends, it was like, you're not going out looking like that. They'll just laugh at you. It'd be things like that. I don't have to go. I'm sure everyone in this room, well, some of you in this room have experienced abuse from your parents. She did some really crazy shit, I have to say. Oops, sorry. If I was bleeding in front of her, she had compassion for me. But she couldn't see the emotional pain I was in. So fortunately, I was a very confident little girl. And I had a lot of energy. And I was very creative and I was very smart. But by the time I was 14, I was self-conscious. I had already gone through hell at school also, been mercilessly teased. I was the only red-headed, freckled girl in my school. I was teased a lot. At camp, I was attacked by a group of boys and girls to strip me because I was 11 and I looked like I was 16. So very early on, there was a lot of attention to what I look like and my body, and unfortunately it was never very good attention. It wasn't good. And I really disconnected from my body enormously. I probably started going into depression around 14 or 15. So I basically, I never developed real discipline. I never developed a sense of responsibility to other people. I always wanted to help people, but I never had any. I was so isolated in my own self-doubt and self-hatred that what came out of me was a very opinionated young girl, strong values, and they were pretty good values, and they still are. I was always for kindness. I was always for charity. I loved animals. I had a lot of good qualities, but my father, I just found a birthday card that my dad wrote me when I was 36. And he wrote poetry and he sang my praises. And he said, well, we can't say she's perfect because if she has an opinion, you do not want to try to change her mind. I laughed like crazy because he and I used to get into these discussions. And it was really, you know, I have to say so much of it is a blur. When I got married, I met him at 19 and we got married in our early 20s. And when I look at how many lost moments I had trying to navigate when to take my pills so I won't eat, so I'll be thinner, so the pills will wear off by the time we get home from work and I will be able to have sex with him, because when you're on the amphetamines, it's very difficult to enjoy sex. You're not interested. You're speeding along. You're like, okay, when's it going to be over? And he had no idea what I was doing. He had no idea the food I was... Is this funny? I don't know. Oh, okay. I had no idea the food I was eating. I ate in the car. I ate when he wasn't home. I never ate at a red light because somebody would drive up next to me and see me eating. I was always ashamed of eating. I ate in the bathroom at school from very young, from 11 years old on. I really thought I shouldn't eat. I just shouldn't eat. And as my disease progressed, because now it had kicked in, when I was in college, I starved myself for 30 days. I fasted. I passed out behind the wheel of my car, crashed into a wall, and fortunately nothing happened to me. My appendix ruptured from continual irritation from laxatives and diet pills and purging. This was my life. My life was all around how not to put on weight, how not to eat. But I've been 200 pounds and I've been 100 pounds. Because I was very eclectic in my methodology with losing weight. And so what would happen is the laxatives, like, they turned against me. I had to defecate in my car because I couldn't hold it in anymore. So I had to go off of that for a while. Gave my body a rest. Then I couldn't vomit anymore, because my gag reflex wouldn't work. So I had to go back. I went back on the laxatives. This was my life. I mean, when I look back, I can say this. I've been in recovery longer than I've been sick. I've had an extraordinary life that I never could have imagined. My dreams of what my life would look like were rather average. I want to get married. I want to have 4 kids. I want to have a nice house. I want to have I don't have any of that. So when I got married, I'm all over the place, I know, but it's hard to keep a chronology unless I write it down and then I get lost in that. When I was married, we were together for 5 years before we got married, and we started to try to have a baby the first year we were married, and it happened right away. And I was very into health. I put on about 50 pounds, 60 pounds. I was very into health. Like, there was this woman, I can't remember her name. I think it was Adele something. She came out with what you should do when you're pregnant, how you should eat, and what vitamins you should take. It's one of the first books of its kind. This is 1972. And I followed it to the nth degree. But I didn't like the amount she suggested, so I added to it. I always felt hungry. I carried for 10 months, and I knew something was wrong at 9 1/2, and I begged the doctors to give me a C-section, and they wouldn't. And when I went into labor, it was an irregular labor, and they left me in labor for 64 hours. and my son died in labor. They finally did give me a C-section because I almost died. I don't remember a lot afterwards about anything other than not being able to go to work because I would get these spasms in my back that were so horrible that I couldn't function. And I just remember my two closest friends coming from, we all worked together. My husband went to work, must have told him. He left me on the floor because he was so sick of me having these spasms. Yeah, he was a great guy. And they came, picked me up off the floor and took me to therapy, which I didn't need, by the way. I didn't need therapy. I knew what I was doing. I was in control. I had this stuff down. I knew how to lose weight. You know, all of us are pretty experienced with dieting. So I knew how to do it. And I didn't need therapy. I acted like nothing happened. Nobody in my family talked about my son dying. Nobody mentioned it yet. How many people must have been in grief over this? My parents, my relatives, my friends. Not me. I wasn't in touch with, I wasn't in grief. I was fine. I was going to go back to work. But they dragged me to therapy and I wasn't fine. He's a great therapist. And, I got to feel the grief. And I will say, you don't get over it. But the good news is I don't eat over it. I don't starve over it. And it's certainly nothing like it was 40-something years ago. 1973, how long ago is that? 45, 46 years ago? I lost track after I turned 50. 47 years ago. So, what I learned, though, through life is bad things just happen to everybody. I have a friend who says, she's a Buddhist nun, and she says, behind every front door is suffering. And that was a big awareness for me. It helped me not, I never went into self-pity. I just felt, you know, sad. I should have done more. I should have taken the baby out myself. All that kind of thinking. And I wasn't prepared. I had no coping skills. The only coping skill I had was to eat or starve. That's the only coping skill I knew. Or yell. I was a big yeller. I had major temper tantrums. I can still see my father ducking when I would be throwing things at him because I'd be so mad. I might have been like 8. I don't get mad anymore. I don't get angry hardly about anything. It would take an awful lot. I'm basically pretty peaceful. I'm calm. I'm still a strong woman. When I look back on who that was and how my life I was transformed into who I am today, to me, it's nothing short of a miracle, and I owe this to Overeaters Anonymous. This is not my spiritual path, Overeaters Anonymous. When I first went in, it was 1980. My secretary said, why don't you come to OA with me? So I went with her. I don't know why she was telling me I needed it. I was like a size 3. I don't know what she was talking about. But you mentioned God, and I ran. I never went back. You were all a bunch of evangelists, and I am not staying with you guys. So I had to go out and suffer a little more, get sicker. I went back, and I think I went back a year later. This time someone hugged me, and I thought, welcome me. Hugging me. This was Los Angeles. Big program in Los Angeles, and they're big huggers out there. And I thought, what the hell does she want from me? I had to go out and get sicker. Any excuse I could find to not let anybody know what I was doing. People were talking about what they were doing and how they lived and what they would... that was not going to be me. No one's going to find out what I do. I had to get much sicker. And what happened is none of my approaches, I got divorced in 1978, I think. I was 30. That's when my disease really took off. I was drinking a lot. I was doing Quaaludes, Secanols. I would go to a bar to pick up a man. I would take a Secanol first or a Quaalude. I can't remember which I was doing. And I would drink. And then I was free. I could dance. I could pick up a guy. I could get laid. I could just show that I'm desirable. No offense, guys, but, you know, you're not that difficult to get excited. So why my ego was so built up because men got excited from being around me, I have no idea. But they did, and I liked it, because my husband left me and married 2 weeks after the divorce was final to a woman he had been working with, who he had told me he was just friends with. So I did that for, so I was 30. And then what happened is I was working in some charity capacity where I was being a therapist. I became a therapist. I have to talk about my profession because it's such a big part of my story. And I couldn't diet anymore. I couldn't take any pills anymore. I couldn't do any more fasts. I couldn't drink any more liquid meals. So those liquid meals, they came out in those days, and it was like everyone was rushing for these liquid meals. Weight Watchers didn't work anymore. I remember a woman getting up and speaking at a Weight Watchers meeting that I went to. She said, I'm finally a size 14. I said to myself, shoot me if I am happy about being a size 14. Just shoot me. I was so unaware of everything. I just had no consciousness at all. I was just asleep because this disease numbed me so much. You know, when this is true for, I'm an eating disorder specialist in my field. And what happens with, when we think about the food that we want, and this is true, and I just say we because I know this is how it works. When I first discovered sweet, but when I first discovered how numb I got after I overate, because the endorphins where I'd been rushing through, when we go into a type of a negative stasis, where we just kind of numb out, and we can't stop eating when we're doing that, because the brain is just, this is the coping skill. The brain got triggered, it goes into the hypothalamus, and that's it. I'm on automatic pilot. Because I don't taste anything after the third bite of anything. It's the planning, the buying, the preparing, all of that is the ritual of, or the stealing, or the eating in secret. All of that is part of the drug-induced numbness that food brings us. We have the hardest addiction to get well with because we have to eat. We have to go to our drugstore. We have to buy our food. We have to store our food. We have to eat our food. We have to eat it in a certain amount. I do anyway, and I encourage other people because portion size is not, you know, in our vocabulary. And alcoholics don't have to drink. Drug addicts don't have to shoot up or sniff or do anything. This and sex addiction are the two hardest ones to get well with. There's people everywhere if you have that addiction. And there's food everywhere. So I was totally into the addiction. I lived the addiction. I was enslaved. You might as well put handcuffs on me, chains around my ankles. I was absolutely enslaved. So after the second time I went to OA, I was 31. I couldn't diet anymore. I couldn't use any methods anymore. Nothing would work. The laxatives, I was constipated. They didn't even work on me anymore. Nothing worked. I got up to 220 pounds from maybe 110, 115, 120. It's funny, you know, I can remember my weight from every period of my life practically. I could look at those pictures and say, I know how much I weighed there, I know how much I weighed there. I crawled in one night to OA. I tell a story all the time, but I had a nectarine tree in my backyard. I always say that this is my line. My tree trembled in fear as it saw me approaching with the bucket. I literally raped that tree of the nectarines. And I must have consumed, I know this is an exaggeration probably, but close to 50 nectarines. And I'm in a dark room. I'm in my dark living room. The television's on. I have no idea what's on. And I'm just eating. And I start crying while I'm biting into this nectarine. And I remember this like last night. I go, what's wrong with me? Why can't I stop eating? It's the first time I asked this damn question. My father used to say to me, so many things in life you can't control. This you can control. Well, then what's wrong with me that I can't control this? I finished college. I had work. I stood up for work. I was promoted in all my jobs. What's going on? And I heard a voice telling me, you're sick. And my other line is, and everyone in LA hears voices. So I heard the voice, you're sick. And what do I do? I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And I heard, go to OA. It was a magical moment. And I was so broken from the whipping that I got from this disease that I looked up where there was a meeting, and I went to that meeting. And I'm sitting at a table like this, a few tables like this, and we're all sitting around. There's a woman who's a speaker. She looks like she's about 300 pounds. I'm thinking, what the hell am I doing in this room? But I can't stop crying. So I'm sitting in the seat and I'm crying. And this woman takes my hand over here. And this person takes my hand over here. And they're holding my hand. And she starts speaking and she says, my name is so-and-so. I've been in the program a year. I've lost over 100 pounds. Now, before she said that, I thought everyone looked really ugly and disgusting. And after she said that, everyone was radiant. I thought they just... really, they were radiant. They were just shining. And I never left. I was struck abstinent. I got a sponsor immediately. I was struck abstinent. I stayed abstinent. I didn't really like going to meetings. I didn't want to go, but I always went. And in those days, you had to do 90 meetings in 90 days. And I went through hell and high water, I got to those meetings, regardless of what was going on. And L.A. had a very big, we had moved from New York to L.A. a while ago, and L.A. has a very big, vibrant program there back in the 70s, even 80s. So in 1984, so I'd been in recovery a couple of years, I met some people from India. And I wound up going to India and living there for a while. And, of course, my whole life changed from that experience. I would say if everyone in this country should go to India and just spend a week. You won't complain anymore if the water's not hot enough. In order to take a shower, they had to boil water in a cauldron for us and bring us buckets of hot water. We didn't have running water where we were staying. I stayed there almost a year, went all throughout India, did charity work, a lot of meditation. And my life really changed. I saw the world very differently. I stayed as abstinent as I could, and another OA person went with me. So we helped each other stay as abstinent as we could with the food. And it was as life-changing for me as OA. But I had not had OA as my foundation. I never could have experienced the radical, amazing spiritual development that I had in India and my connection with my higher power, which has morphed over the years. I don't know what time it is. Is anyone timing me? Okay. And I really became very, very spiritual. And my spirituality has transformed over the years as well. But without OA, I never could have awakened. It just wouldn't have happened. Because I was numb. I was numb to everything. And I was always compassionate. I was always optimistic, even through all the torture that I went through. I remember seeing a therapist and telling her some things that my mother had said to me and done. And she looked at me and she said, my God, she said, that's evil. It's actually evil. Now, I had always minimized it because I always thought I was the reason my mother was so unhappy. until I learned about this disease. And then I realized she had it. And my aunts and her side of the family had it. And my grandmother had it, and she committed suicide, my mother's mother. Depression ran in my ancestry and through my mother. Obsession and inability to control eating, their eating disorders. I didn't stand a chance. My father, white-knuckled stopping drinking and white-knuckled stopping cigarettes. So addiction was there. And, the statistics are that if you have one parent who has addiction, you have a 50% chance. But if you have two parents who have addiction, it's a 98%. If you only come from a one-parent household, that's just whatever they have. It's a given. So when I came back from India, I was looking for work. So I was looking to go work at a mental health center. My friend who came back with me saw an ad in the paper for an eating disorders intake counselor. And I thought, ugh. She said, this would be a great job for you. I said, are you kidding? I have this disease. You think I want to work with people who have this disease? I don't even want to talk about it except when I'm at a meeting. She said, no, this feels right for you. She cuts it out. She puts it on my night table. So I had three dogs. I threw it in the garbage because I knew what was best for me still. That didn't go away in India, I have to say. I learned patience in India. That I did learn. But the dogs got into the garbage, and I was leaving to go take my resume to a mental health center, and there was the ad along with some other garbage right by the front door. I said, okay, I'm going to go for the job. They hired me right away. Within 2 months, I was promoted to the clinical coordinator of the whole unit. This was with Rader Institute. It was the first eating disorders, national eating disorders treatment program through the country. And then within 2 years, they promoted me to clinical director and transferred me to Florida, where I was clinical director over 5 different hospital programs in Georgia and Florida. I knew nobody in Florida. The program was very, very weak, very weak. And after LA, it was a culture shock. And my dog was diagnosed with bladder cancer. And she came with me, and I relapsed big time. So I dragged myself, and I stopped going to meetings at that time, and I dragged myself to a meeting, and I remember saying, I can't relapse. I can't stay like this. I'll lose everything I've worked for, and I won't be able to help people. I loved the work, by the way. I didn't want this job, right? Not me. Who wants to be around all of us all the time? I didn't want it. I loved it. I was good at it. I loved it. I loved all the people. I felt connected to them. I could think and know how to help them. I was a big proponent for the 12-step program. Helped a lot of people get off their arrogance about, no, I don't do groups, I don't do God, I don't do higher power, all that stuff that I did. I'm still pretty much an advocate. I've had to modify a little bit for people who refuse because I don't want to leave them without getting help. But so I relapsed, and within maybe a month or two, I must have put on 25 pounds, maybe a month. Didn't even take me very long. I said, well, I can't do this. How can I be teaching people how to work with us if I'm like this? So I within a month, I was back on track and did very well. And I have a miracle story that I tell whenever I tell my story. So I was back on recovery. I was driving home and I passed a fast food place and they had one of the places that I used to binge from all the time on something cold and a big container. Thick, cold in a big container. White. I liked white. And my car is going into the drive-thru. And I'm praying please don't let me get this. Please don't let me get this. Don't let me do this. I don't want to lose my work. I don't want to lose my life again. Please don't let me get this. But I'm still driving the car. They don't have the speakers out in front. You have to go to the window. 1980s. And I pull up and I order it. And she says, oh, ma'am, we're so sorry. The machine just broke about 2 seconds ago. I fought for it. I fought for it. Even though everything in me wanted that, everything in me didn't want it. I've never had one since. And the prayer works if you're sincere. If we just rattle off the prayers and we don't think about what we're saying and we don't really turn to anything that could, I don't know what's out there. I really don't. I don't say I believe in God. I am Buddhist now, but I don't know that. I just know something is operating here, greater than myself. And I knew that before I hit OA. I had a spontaneous spiritual awakening after my divorce. And I knew something was there, but I never knew how to relate. I never had a relationship. I just knew I was a part of something that I realized I wasn't separate from what's going on out here. Like, I'm just a part of it. But my mind had expanded, and it was open to knowing that my reality was very myopic and very limited. And I was so close-minded that I never prayed to open my mind. I mean, it literally had to be knocked into me through tragedy and difficulties for me to open up to the idea that something greater than me. And what I loved about the program is it said, even if you don't believe in anything, make the group your higher power. And I had to do that for a while, and it worked. So I've been on maintenance now for 15 years, and actually I've lost about 15 pounds since I moved here from Florida. And that reason is not because I tried. It's only because I actually didn't like it. I was raised with Marilyn Monroe and Jane Russell and, you know, women with bodies, not Twiggy. And so I still liked that about myself. And then it was going, well, I moved here. I'm much more active. I'm doing more in Florida. I never left my house the last 5 years because it's like walking around a wet blanket on you. I mean, I just hated it. It was so hot. It was like, it was horrible. Once the menopause hit, it's like, no heat. I don't want any heat. Don't put me where it's hot. And I came to visit some friends here, and it was 12 below zero. I said, well, I don't think it's what I'm really looking for. But I loved it, and I felt like I was home. And then I came back in the spring, and I moved here like about 3 months later. So I've had some near-death experiences, and early on I definitely know it was the result of what I was doing to myself. And I have what's called Barrett's esophagus, which is a precancerous condition in the esophagus, and this comes from reflux, and it comes from a lot of people with bulimia have this. So I have to get it looked at like every 6 months. And I have to take the pills that actually they have proven might start the cancer, but there's no choices. Otherwise, I'm just suffering with the reflux, and I can't do that. So I have to do what's available to me. Natural approaches didn't work. And I haven't relapsed through a lot of tragedies that I've gone through. And it's the strength of the program and my willingness to believe that I can do this with the help of everyone else and my higher power. Because by the time I crawled in, I really didn't have any, I didn't have anything. I didn't even think about it. I didn't even know. All I knew is I felt like a failure. I was weak. I was stupid. No one's going to love me. I'm someone who did not leave my house for weeks at a time because I thought everyone would be looking at me and saying, well, she shouldn't go out like that. Look at her. She looks so horrible. I got so paranoid. I never don't go out now if I want to go out. And not only that, I have to tell you, I love being 72 because first of all, I'm invisible to the youth culture and to everyone else, because even the older men like the younger women. I mean, you do. But and you're married. Most of you are married. And I'm invisible. And it's such freedom. Wear what I want. Do what I want. Everything was always about, okay, how do I look? Will a man find me attractive? Am I thin enough? Am I attractive? And, oh my gosh. But recovery, that diminished a lot, and I was usually in a relationship. But there is something about aging. I earned every single wrinkle on this face. I'm proud of them. I'm happy. I'm joyous. I'm free. I love my work. I have more plans of how to expand it and help more people. I have a vibrant energy. I have a youthful spirit. I have reclaimed my life from this disease that was definitely trying to kill me, and it's waiting to kill me again. I can honestly say I do believe that I would never go back to bulimia or starving again. I do think all that's been lifted. I have no cravings. I have no obsessions about food, and that's been for 15 years straight. It's like what they say, you know, it's a miracle, but it got lifted. But I really did work the heck out of this. And the fact that my higher power knew that if I was not submerged in this world 24/7 with my work and the program, I probably would not have stayed with it. Because the program lets me help people. And if I don't have my recovery, I can't do what I do. And on that note, I'm going to say, if you're struggling, do what you're told to do. Give up your pride, your arrogance, your ideas about how things should be done. Just do what you're told to do. And you will have good recovery. The weight is just a symptom of the disease. And so once we're in recovery, if we're not at a healthy weight, that just starts to go away. That symptom goes away. The symptom is not the weight. The disease is not the weight. The disease has symptoms. And some people can eat the way I ate and not gain a pound. And some people could have starved the way I starved and they would have been much skinnier than me. It doesn't matter. That the body does what it does. I have scars on the war wounds, I call them, my war wounds from my disease. The stretch marks, some scars from some surgeries I've had because of the disease. I don't care. It's fine. My body still stayed with me. It didn't perish. And it's only because of recovery. So now you know why I'm so passionate about this program. Because it means a lot. So I don't go to that many meetings here. I have a group that I'm in touch with in Florida, and we speak every week. And part of the reason is that I worked with a sponsor and a therapist to help me get balance in my life. Because I would be in meetings a lot more than I am. But I do this every day, all day long with clients. And so I need to have another part of my life that's going. But nowadays, we have meetings online. We have telephone meetings. We never have to go a day without a meeting. If you're struggling, don't go a day without a meeting. Don't watch an hour of Law and Order. Listen to a meeting for an hour. You know? So, does anyone watch Law and Order here? Why did that come out of my mouth? I think it's my fault. Anyway, I'm sorry. I think I must have gone over, but I wasn't monitored. I need to be monitored. So anyway, thank you very much.